Peace be upon you. God willing, today we're going to talk about the concept of waste. And I'm going to start by reading a verse in chapter 6, verse 141. It reads, seek refuge in God from sin and rejected. It reads, he is the one who established gardens trellised and untrellised, and palm trees and crops with different tastes, and olives and pomegranate, fruits that are similar yet dissimilar. Eat from their fruits and give the due alms on the day of harvest. And do not waste anything. He does not love the wasters. So what does it mean to waste something? Because it's very specific here. It says, do not waste anything, and that God does not love the wasters. Let's try to look deeper into this and see kind of what it means. And usually when we think of waste, the first thing that comes to mind is food. Even in this verse, it's talking about crops of different tastes, olives, pomegranate. And it's true. I mean, we waste a whole lot of food. And it's pretty sad because statistically, there's about 870 million people who are considered hungry or malnourished in the world. Each day, 2.5 million children die of malnourishment. Yet, the population has doubled within the last 50 years from 3.5 billion to about 7 billion today. We produce 27% more food per person today than we did back then. You know, so where's all this excess food going to? Well, a lot of it is actually going to, surprisingly, obesity. We had a lot of countries that were previously, you know, suffering from malnourishment that are now actually suffering from diabetes and obesity. And it's estimated that there's over 500 million obese individuals in the world, and that number is growing. So, you know, that's kind of a tangent. But, you know, clearly we're creating enough food for everyone. Yet, there's still, you know, a problem in the sense of the management of the food. And it's estimated that 50% of all food is wasted from the farm to when it reaches our plates. That 50% of that is lost. And 8% is lost in production, 4% during packaging and processing, 6% of the food that reaches supermarkets is lost, which actually isn't that bad. And same thing with the, you know, during the production and packaging. I listened to a talk of the chief operating officer, Frito-Lay. You see the level of efficiency they have in the sense of being able to produce potato chips, that they use every single ounce of that potato, and what's actually not consumed, they put back into the factory to power it, to produce the potato chip. So that's actually pretty efficient. And this is where we start seeing where the big waste happens. So 15% of all food that reaches restaurants is thrown out, and 25% of all the food that reaches households is thrown away. So these are foods that reach, you know, their end destination, but due to one circumstance or another, maybe the person liked the taste or it passed the expiration date, but they end up throwing it away. And, you know, when we throw away a piece of food, we're not just throwing away that one item. We're throwing away all the resources, the time, the energy that went into creating that food. And just to give you kind of an understanding of that, California provides 50% of the U.S.'s fruits and vegetables and consumes 80% of the state's water. 20% of California's energy is used to transport that water, which 80% is used for irrigation. And California's one of the main produces is nuts, in particular pistachios and almonds. Now, how much water do you think it takes to produce one almond or one pistachio? It takes 1 gallon of water just to produce one almond and 3/4 of a gallon to produce one pistachio. Now you think of this, if you drop a pistachio and you say, ah, it touched the ground, it's not good anymore, what's the big deal, it's just one pistachio, or it's just, oh, it's just one almond. Realistically, you're not just throwing away that almond or that pistachio, you've just lost 1 gallon or 3/4 of a gallon of water along with that almond. Not to mention all the other resources that has gone into it. And in chapter 13, verse 4, it reads, on earth there are adjacent lots that produce orchards of grapes, crops, palm trees, dioecious and non-dioecious. Although they are irrigated with the same water, we prefer some of them over others in eating. These are solid proofs for people to understand. So this is just looking at, you know, something that seems relatively trivial, pistachio and almond. You know, what if we look at meat? Because a lot of the Quran talks about livestock and how much of a blessing it is to have livestock. A cow that's used for meat, and again, I kind of just quickly pulled these stats off the internet, so they might be flawed to an extent, but it's just to build an awareness. So a cow that's used for meat, so cattle, on average lives for 14 months from the day it's basically born to when it's sent off to slaughter. Each day, that one cow will consume about 45 pounds of grain and 20 gallons of water. That comes out in the life, so in a lifespan of 14 months, just shy of 20,000 pounds of grain and 8,500 gallons of water for the life of that one animal, so we can produce meat. So the cow lives up to basically be about 1,200 pounds, and from that we get about 600 pounds of consumable meat. So we're talking about, the tri-tip, the rump, the brisket, the ribs, everything that we consume as far as meat. You get about 600 pounds of meat from a 1,200 pound cow. Therefore, if we waste 1 pound of that meat, if you do the math, you're wasting 32 pounds of grain and 14 gallons of water. So that 1 pound of meat that you think, it's gone bad, I didn't get to use it, or oh, it's been sitting in the freezer for too long, let me just get rid of it, what's the big deal? In that context, it's the equivalent of taking 32 pounds of grain and 14 gallons of water, and just you might as well just pour it down a drain or throw it in the garbage along with that pound of meat, because that's what we're doing in essence when we do that. And in 1666 it reads, "And of the livestock there is a lesson for you. We provide you with a drink from their bellies. From the midst of digested food and blood, you get pure milk, delicious for the drinkers." So let's look at milk. Let's see what happens when you basically throw out 1 gallon of milk. A dairy cow, unlike a cow that's produced for meat, it lives for about 4 years, and it produces 18,750 gallons of milk on average, so just shy of 20,000 gallons of milk on average in its lifespan of 4 years. Each day it consumes about 45 pounds of grain and 25 gallons of water. So in its entire lifespan of 4 years, it's going to consume 65,700 pounds of grain and 36,500 gallons of water. In its entire life, that's how much it consumes to produce just shy of 20,000 gallons of milk. If we waste 1 gallon of milk, you say, oh, it's past that expiration date, let's get rid of it. What we're doing is we're throwing out 3.5 pounds of grain and 2 gallons of water for that 1 gallon of milk. And in 32:27 it reads, "Do they not realize that we drive the water to barren lands and produce with it crops to feed their livestock as well as themselves? Do they not see?" But there's more to this than just the food and water that the cow consumes, because it takes a whole lot of say water, energy, time, land, environmental impact, all this stuff to produce that 1 gallon of milk or that 1 pound of meat. When you take everything in consideration, as far as all the water that's needed to produce that 1 gallon of milk, it's estimated that it takes over 2,000 gallons of water to produce 1 gallon of milk. And this is looking at the entire supply chain, everything from the transport, the feed, the washing, the pasteurization, every single step along the way. If you calculate all the water that's needed to produce 1 gallon of milk, it's the equivalent of 2,000 gallons of fresh water. And 1 pound of meat, it's calculated to take 2,400 gallons of water to produce 1 pound of meat. So when we throw out that 1 pound of meat or that 1 gallon of milk, it's the equivalent of throwing out 2,000 gallons of water, 2,400 gallons of water in the case of meat. Just to give you a little bit of context, just how much water, 2,400 gallons of water is. The average shower takes about 8 minutes and consumes about, depending on if you what kind of flow you have in your shower head, but between 2 and 5 gallons of water per minute. So let's say 3 gallons of water per minute. So each shower, if it's on average 8 minutes, is going to consume about 24 gallons of water. And if you wanted to save 2,400 gallons of water, it's the equivalent of not showering for 100 days, assuming that you were planning on showering every single day. So you're saying, hey, you know what? I want to save water and I'm just going to stop showering for 100 days. That's the equivalent of saving 1 pound of meat. Now, you think of all those scraps when you go to the restaurant, when you come home, they say, you know what, I'm just, this piece doesn't taste good, it's too dry, it's too God knows what, and you throw it out. That's how much resources you're wasting along with that. And in addition, I mean, like, you know, that's mentioned before, is there's so much more. This is just looking at the water, the grain, you know, but you have to think about all the steps, all the stages that needed to take place for you to be able to get that 1 gallon of milk or that 1 pound of water, sorry, 1 pound of beef. Okay, so you got to grow massive amounts of corn, grain, and soybeans with all the required tilling, irrigation, crop dusters, etc. Transport the grain, the soybeans, the feed to the manufacturers so they can feed their animals. Operate the feeds, so the mills that basically feed those animals and all the energy that's used in doing that. Transport the feed from the factory farms and operate the factory farms. Truck the animals basically many miles to be slaughtered. Operate the slaughterhouses. Transport the meat. Refrigerate the meat throughout the entire step. All the sanitization. Operate the meat processing plants. Transport to the grocery stores, from the grocery stores to your house. And then, in addition, all the land, the time, the environmental impact, you know, the methane that's produced by the cows, the water contamination from the fecal. All this was taken in consideration to produce just these small quantities of meat and milk. Now, the whole concept, you know, of bringing this up is that, you know, when we waste, in essence, what we're doing is that we're being unappreciative, that we're not thinking about all that's gone into basically producing this you know, delicacy for us. And in 2237, it reads, neither their meat nor their blood reaches God. What reaches him is your righteousness. He has subdued them for you, that you may show your appreciation by glorifying God for guiding you. Give good news to the charitable. So all this, and in addition, the most important aspect is that this cow gave its life so we can eat its meat. And it's something that we can't take lightly. You know, and when we waste, what we're doing is we're being unappreciative. We're taking for granted all this that God has given to us, all this that came into producing what's on our plates. And we need to be conscientious of that. And by no means am I saying, you know, we shouldn't eat meat. It's actually a blessing from God, and there's so many nutrients and benefits that come out of it. My whole purpose of this is to show that we need to be appreciative. We need to be thankful for every single glass of milk we have, for every single bite of steak that we ever consume, or any meat at that, that we're always thankful. We're conscientious of everything that's gone into produce this, to put this on our plate, you know, eventually in our stomachs. And in 16, verse 5, it reads, and he created the livestock for you to provide you with warmth and many other benefits as well as food. And in 2054, it reads, eat and raise your livestock. These are sufficient proofs for those who possess intelligence. I'm going to go back to the first question. You know, what does it mean to waste something? Because I used to make this justification for myself. I used to say, you know what, if I throw out my food, it's not really going to waste because, you know, the ants and the worms and, you know, the insects, they're going to be consuming that food, and I'm really providing them with sustenance that they wouldn't have otherwise. But you have to ask this, the whole concept of waste, this is the definition I came to myself, is that waste is simply not using something to its full potential. Meaning, you think about all the resources, all the time that's put into basically producing, you know, that delicious, tasty piece of steak or that fresh milk. And, you know, these animals that I was thinking about, the worms, the insects, they could care less. They don't care if it's carrion, they don't care if it's fresh, they don't care if it's organic, farm grown, whatever. But our bodies, we do. And when we treat it in that manner, it shows that we're being unappreciative because we're not using it to its full potential. But we can extrapolate this concept of waste way beyond food. Think of this example. Let's say you get a PhD in mathematics, and you decide after all this work, all this time, this energy, the resources, that, you know what, I love having this PhD in mathematics, but I think I'm just going to go and bus some tables, you know, become a busboy. Now you have to ask yourself, are you wasting the resources, the time, the intellect, everything that God has given you? Are you being unappreciative for everything that God has given you, in essence, to be able to achieve that degree, that level of knowledge. There's so many other examples that can be made. You know, someone else, they get an expert computer programmer, and then they decide, you know what, I'm just going to get into gardening. And it's not to say that there's anything wrong with gardening, you know, or anything wrong with bussing tables. The thing is, it's the fact that, you know, God has given us certain resources, certain skill sets. And if we're not using them to its full potential, are we being appreciative for all the resources, the time, everything that God has put into that to basically give us this gift? And it's easy. It's easy, in essence, to be lazy or play ourselves down. It's hard to strive to go for to maximize our potential. And when we do that, in essence, you know, we're not only wasting the resources that God has given us, but we're being incredibly unappreciative. And you think of this, you know, God has given us one more chance in this life to basically be redeemed, to make it back into God's kingdom. And what do most people do? You know, do most people think about God and remember God and try to grow and develop their soul? Or are they out chasing the vanities of this world? Are they wasting this last opportunity that God has given to them to basically be able to experience everything firsthand for ourselves of God's glory? And in chapter 6, verse 128, it says, "The day will come when he summons all of them and says, 'O you jinns, you have claimed multitudes of humans.' Their human companions will say, 'Our Lord, we enjoyed each other's company until we wasted the lifespan you had sent for us.' He will say, 'Hell is your destiny. They abide therein forever in accordance with God's will. Your Lord is wise, omniscient.'" And in 46:20 it reads, "The day will come when those who disbelieved will be introduced to the hellfire. You have wasted the good chances given to you during your worldly life, and you rejoiced in them. Consequently, you incur a shameful retribution as a requital for the arrogance you committed on earth without any basis for your evil works." So, imagine this. I mean, God has given us the foundations of our religion. God has given us the zakat, that we give 2.5% of any money we make to, you know, the relatives, the parents, the poor, in the particular category, on the day of harvest. God has given us the contact prayers that five times a day we spend, you know, 2 minutes, and we perform the contact prayer and we remember God. And during these times, you know, do we take it for granted? Do we put it off? Do we say, you know what, I'm just too busy right now. I can't, you know, I can't do my contact prayers, or I'm too tight on money. I can't give my zakat. And what are we doing when we do that? You know, we're wasting the opportunity that God has given us. God is giving us an opportunity to cash a huge check for our soul, to consume a huge meal for our soul. And we're unappreciative when we pass up on it. And you have to think, like, you know, even if you're, say, by God's leave, you're giving your zakat, you're doing your salat, you know, those 2 minutes, you know, I'm guilty of this too. Am I really thinking about God? Am I remembering God? Am I using this opportunity to its fullest? And again, God is telling us, don't waste anything. And God tells us in the Quran in 4103, 591, and 2014, that the purpose of the contact prayers is to remember God. It says, "Once you complete your contact prayer salat, you shall remember God while standing, sitting, or lying down. Once the war is over, you shall observe the contact prayer salat. The contact prayer salat are decreed for the believers at specific times." In 591, it says, "The devil wants to provoke animosity and hatred among you through intoxicants and gambling, and to distract you from remembering God and from observing the contact prayers, salat, will you then refrain?" And in 2014, it says, "I am God, there's no other God beside me, you shall worship me alone and observe the contact prayers, salat, to remember me." So during these times, you know, when we, before we eat, are we remembering God? Are we taking that opportunity and really kind of like consuming ourselves in the fact that this is an opportunity to really reflect and remember God? And what happens when we remember God? There's a beautiful outcome of this, and it's in 13:20. It says, "They're the ones whose hearts rejoice in remembering God." Absolutely, by remembering God, the hearts rejoice. That when we follow these steps, when we're, one, appreciative, two, we remember God, The outcome is that our hearts rejoice upon remembering God, because we see, you know, we no longer look at that gallon of milk and just see a simple gallon of milk. We think about all the resources that went into producing that, you know, delicious, pure gallon of milk. And when we take that drink, we think of everything that it does as far as to nourish us. When you think of all the products that you produce with milk, the cheese, the ice creams, the creams, all this stuff that God has made out of this, you know, we're truly appreciative during it. And when we remember God, simply our hearts rejoice. And you think about people who have a operation, right? So they're recovering from an operation at a hospital, and the doctor gives them the little push button that releases morphine. And you talk to some of these guys, and they're saying, oh, it's the best thing ever. Each time I feel, you know, any pain, I push this thing and I get morphine, and it feels so relaxing. Now, the catch is that obviously with the morphine, one, it's not sustainable. Two, it has a ton of side effects, right? And it's not real, true happiness. But with remembering God, with being appreciative, with our hearts rejoicing, this is something that we have unlimited access to. There is no limit, and it's never bad for us. The more we do it, surprisingly, it's actually better for us. The more appreciative we are, the more we remember God, the more our hearts rejoice. And it's an awesome positive cycle, positive feedback loop. And it's something that, in essence, all revolves around us being appreciative. That, you know, when we're at the grocery store, when we're at, you know, a restaurant, before our food even comes out, you know, or even think about the transportation to get us to that restaurant, or, you know, the accommodations of your own home, that you're absolutely in awe of everything that God has put forth for you to be able to have that meal. All this makes us appreciative. This is actually one of the characteristics of God, that he describes himself as God is appreciative. And in 35:34, it reads, they will say, praise God for removing all our worries. Our Lord is forgiving, appreciative. And in 64:17 says, if you lend God a loan of righteousness, he will multiply the reward for you manifold and forgive you. God is appreciative, clement. So what does it mean for God to be appreciative? My understanding of appreciative is that when we're appreciative for something, we see the value in it. When we have that delicious cut of steak, we're appreciative for it because we see the value. We see everything that's gone into making that steak that we're about to consume. And similarly, God sees every single interaction in this world. God never wastes anything. Every opportunity that God has put in front of us is to teach us something so we can learn something, so we can grow and develop our soul from this. And because of that, God is appreciative because God sees the value in everything. From the slightest, you know, the smallest atom or smaller, to the shifts that happen in the universe, that God sees it all. And God sees the value in all this. And it's something never to be taken lightly. God willing, we're going to stop there. Inshallah, if you have any comments or questions, feel free to email us at QuranTalk@gmail.com. Until next time, peace and God bless.